I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Americans are bothered by more than 5 billion robocalls every month. Why? It's because robocalls are profitable. They cost almost nothing to send out, and while you might ignore the scammer who's trying to sell you a shady timeshare, not everybody does. In fact, Americans lose about $9 billion to phone scams every year. What can we do to win the war on robocalls, and what can Congress do to rein in the scammers? On this archive edition of Midday, Washington Post tech columnist Jeffrey Fowler, computer science professor Raymond Tu, and policy analyst Maureen Mahoney join me. Our show was recorded earlier, so we can't take your calls and emails. Happy Memorial Day. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon. It is midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. So today, our topic, well, it's surely happened to you. You're holding two bags of groceries and searching for your keys when the phone rings. You frantically put the bags down. You dig your phone out of your purse or your pocket, only to find the call is from a number you've never heard of in Azerbaijan. Last year, 48 billion annoying, often illegal automated calls flooded our cell phones. Another 26 billion came to landlines. If it seems that the number of unwanted calls we get every day is growing, we are right. By one account, Americans received 5.23 billion robocalls last month alone, and 48% of them were scams. So why are there so many of these calls? 3 to 5% of us respond to automated messages and sometimes send scammers thousands of dollars. So as long as that continues, the calls will continue. So other than not answering your phone, what, if anything, can you do to stop robocalls? A little later in the show, we'll hear from a policy analyst at Consumer Reports about legislation that's moving through Congress that might help rein in robocalls. But first, Jeffrey Fowler is a technology columnist for The Washington Post. He joins me on the line from the Post's San Francisco Bureau. Hey, Jeff, welcome back.
Hi, glad to be here.
And Dr. Raymond Tu is a computer science professor at the University of Maryland in College Park, and he's doing research on how to formulate better methods of caller ID. Dr. Tu, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And listeners, you are welcome to call us. And if you do, I promise we'll pick up. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet as well, @midday_WYPR. So, Professor Tu, let me start with you. You wrote a piece in the Washington Post, and the headline was, robocalls are unstoppable. Outline for us the scope of the problem as you see it.
Yeah, robocalls are unstoppable mainly because there are some changes in the recent technology, the economics, and the accountability of fighting robocalls. It's just difficult to fight on a technological level, on an economic level, and an accountability level. One of the issues we found is that the robocalls today are being sent out over computer programs that's routed over the internet. So, for example, a person operating in another country could use a computer program to send out robocalls for millions and millions of American phone numbers, and the entire data is routed over the internet. They don't have to be accountable to the local jurisdiction of the United States. And another problem is the cost of disseminating these calls has become much cheaper. It has become very profitable because it's so cheap to send out these robocalls. Each one of them costs a fraction of a cent. And so they're casting a wide net to catch one or two fish, and that could net them thousands or millions of dollars to fund their entire operation.
And Jeff Fowler, you called it at one point 2019's number one tech problem. This is something that really has risen to the surface on people's radar screens as something that needs to be paid attention to.
Yeah, nothing unites Americans right now quite like a dislike of robocalls. you know, when I wrote that column for the Post recently, Die Robocalls Die, it was the most read story on the Post website for a couple of days, just because people really are frustrated and they want to figure out what they can do. And a lot of people have just been doing this this trick of, like, you know, picking up your phone, and if you get a robocall, you block it. You'll add that number to your phone's block list. But for the reasons we just heard, that is not always going to be very effective, because these robocallers are constantly switching their numbers around, or they might be spoofing a legitimate number that you then blocked, so somebody else you might want to hear from can't call from you. So there's kind of like a lot of bad advice out there right now, too, about what to do about it.
Talk a little bit, Jeff, about spoofing, what that means.
So spoofing is when someone, a robocaller, calls you, and you look at your phone and you see a phone number on it, and you think, well, that must be the person that's calling me. But it actually isn't. They faked that number. Sometimes one common technique is to make it look like sort of like your phone number. Maybe it has the first six digits in common. That's called neighbor spoofing. So they think, oh, if you see a number that looks like yours, you might be more inclined to pick it up and answer. Other times it can just be other important phone numbers out there. Like one of the most common spoof numbers is Apple's phone support. So if you think you're getting a legitimate call from Apple, nope, it's actually a robocaller.
Yeah, and Professor Tu, if you do pick up, and a lot of folks are not picking up these days, of course, then you have the added problem of the fact that a good bit of what you're going to hear on the other end is simply nefarious and not true. You estimate, or the government, I guess, has estimated that there's about a 50% chance that a robocall is spam. This is an enormous percentage, and you're working on some technology regarding caller ID. So how will the technology you're working on help address this problem?
So one of the realization of fighting against robocall is that since these robocallers are changing and faking their caller IDs all the time, so my research dives into how can we prevent a caller from spoofing their phone number, spoofing their caller ID number. And so the technology basically focuses on how to set up a cryptography or public key infrastructure to verify that the caller ID has been verified. So only a caller ID that has been verified by a trusted entity, for example, the FCC could set up an entity to verify the caller ID of people that owns the phone number, and give, let's say, like a certificate to certify this caller ID. And with this certificate, they can send out a caller ID that's been verified. If it's not verified, then when it moves up on the recipient's of a telephone on your phone, you might see a warning stating that whether it's verified or not verified.
So, Professor Tu, I mean, that's interesting. Is that kind of analogous to websites that begin with the letters HTTPS, meaning it's more secure than an HTTP website? Is it something like that?
Yeah, it is similar to that green lock icon you see when you go to your bank website. The main issue there is that the web technology for verifying the website and the way we verify the call ID is a bit different. Call ID is more urgent, and therefore it cannot be verified at a longer time frame. So there are some tweaks involved in fixing that problem. But the idea is the same. You're spot on that.
We got a tweet from Chris who says, your broadcast was interrupted in my car by a robocall that came through on Bluetooth while you were giving your introduction. So it's happening in real time. As a matter of fact, a minute before we went on the air, I got a call from Armenia. At the moment, I'm not aware that I know of anybody who's living in Armenia. Let's go to Richard on the phone from Frederick. Richard, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I've absolutely solved this problem, at least on an iPhone. I set my phone to do not disturb, and the only calls that will come through are people on my contact list. Then I leave a message, and if the iPhone is set and you tell them, if you call back within 2 minutes, this call will go through. I don't get any of them.
All right. Well, thanks for that tip. So, Jeff Fowler, what about Richard's technique? Does that work? Do not disturb on an iPhone, at least, I think, doesn't let anybody's call actually come through, right? It silences your phone.
Yeah, a number of people try Richard's technique. It is kind of the nuclear option. So what it does, do not disturb, says only allow calls that are on your VIP list to come through. And that works if you sort of live in a world where you have a very small set of people that you might want to hear from, that you can manually add them all to the VIP list. But I think most of us still live in a world where we want to be able to answer the phone. There are legitimate reasons people might want to call us, and we might want to talk with them right away. It could be a school. It could be a pharmacy. It could be, you know, a journalist trying to talk to you. It could be, you know, a legitimate poll from the Washington Post that wants to talk to you. So the block everybody except the folks I know approach is popular with some folks, but I just don't think it's really the solution that all Americans are looking for.
Yeah, and Dr. Tu, I wonder, there was a list in Wired magazine, I guess, of the cities, the six cities in the United States that got over a billion robocalls to their residents in a year, I guess, or maybe it's a month. I guess in 2018, New York got 1.7 billion, LA 1.6 billion, Chicago 1.6 billion, and Baltimore, which is a much smaller city than any of those, got 1.1 billion robocalls in 2018. What's that about? Why is it that certain places get more of them than others?
Well, as far as the robocaller is concerned, they're just trying to reach a wider population. So I would imagine the reason why they're picking these area codes is because it's more likely they'll get a hit on the people answering these phone calls. So they don't have to try on, let's say, a rural area where it's unlikely that they'll get a useful phone number that people will pick up.
And Jeff Fowler, it really is pretty easy with the technology that these robocallers have to fake caller IDs. And you write that this, you've written that this is an artifact from the early 1990s when this caller ID service began. So are we just that, are the tech companies, the phone companies, the carriers, just that far behind technology and the robocallers are that far ahead? Is that what we have here? Is this an arms race that the companies are losing?
Yeah, this is a problem. The phone companies, they realize this is a problem, but the main problem is the standardization issue. So a telephone company relies on interconnection to other telephone companies, so they can't just simply make a change and say, hey, I want to authenticate all my phone calls without making sure everybody agrees on this common standard. And the problem with standardization is that every telephone company have their own motives and all their own services that rely on caller ID being able to declare it arbitrarily. For example, it could be, let's say, a call center. They're serving a large population call center where they need to use a common caller ID for legitimate purposes. And there are companies that doesn't want to do that. So this is just a problem with when you deal with a network, everybody has to agree to it 100%, and that's why it moves so slowly.
And Jeff Fowler, you write about big carriers looking at technology that they refer to as stir shaken, right out of a James Bond film. That's a long acronym, right? What is stir shaken going to do putatively?
Yeah, there is. I mean, this is sort of the closest thing we have right now to the carriers trying to get together to figure out some common standards and some technology to figure out whether a number is truly identifying itself. It's called stir shaken, and so far, we've seen some of the biggest carriers agree to kind of get together because, again, they do have to kind of work together to, you know, make sure that they're using the same technology to check that number. But AT&T and Comcast and a couple other, and T-Mobile, and I believe also Verizon, have gotten in on that. Now, it won't solve all of our problems because a lot of these calls are coming from overseas or from carriers who, you know, may not be as scrupulous. But it, you know, as they roll this out into their networks, it could help some.
And Jeff, I think one of the reasons your piece got so many hits on the Post website was it was entitled A How-To Guide to Stop Spammers and Exact Revenge. And people were very interested, I'm sure, in that. One of the things that you do recommend is to go ahead and register on the Do Not Call list. A lot of us have done that, myself included, and it doesn't seem to make even the slightest dent in the number of calls. But perhaps, of course, I don't know how many calls it's stopping because they're not coming through. But that's still not a bad move to do, right? That's sort of where you start.
That's right. It's the equivalent of putting a no trespassing sign on your lawn, so only the good people will pay attention to it. That said, it does at least register with the government that we care about this issue. And I know later in the hour we're going to be talking with some folks that are focused on what Congress and others are doing about this, but they really need to know that this is something we care a lot about. So it only takes 30 seconds, so why not start there, is what I say.
Let's go to our phone lines, to Dave in Bel Air. Dave, welcome to Midday with Jeff Fowler and Dr. Raymond Tu.
Hi. Thanks, Tom. I just want to relate an experience I had that was very tricky. I got a call, and it actually came up as a number in my personal contact list on my phone. I had it listed as Verizon Wireless Bel Air, very specific, and that's what came up on my caller ID. And it turned out it was hackers trying to get some personal information from me. So this spoofing can be more than just a familiar number. It can be very specific.
Yeah, and Dr. Tu, I guess this is a really widespread problem. I mean, what could the carriers be doing? Is Stir Shaken going to address that part of the problem, or are there things that they could be doing that they're not they're spoofing very, very specifically. I mean, it's one thing to do the neighbor spoofing. I get a lot of calls that have my area code and the first three numbers, as Jeff was talking about. But if I don't recognize them, if they're not in my contacts, I don't pick up. But how do these spammers, get the number for the Apple telephone support number or Social Security or something like that?
So right now, because there are no safeguards in place to prevent anyone from spoofing a known number or somewhat trusted phone number, the robocallers are free to use that number to basically run their scams. In the future, the hope is that only the people that has been verified to own that phone number can use that phone number to send out phone calls. And Stir Shaken is a good first step to ensure this kind of verification system is in place. But Stir Shaken is only a subset of all the phone calls being routed over the entire telephone network. Stir Shaken is mainly adopted by U.S. phone companies, and there are still many phone calls that's routed over a different standard and by the ITU, and that will require also standardization on the other part.
Dr. Raymond Tu teaches computer science at the University of Maryland in College Park. Jeffrey Fowler writes about technology as the technology columnist for The Washington Post. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, you're welcome to join us by phone, by the internet, by carrier pigeon, whatever method you prefer. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. If you're going to send a carrier pigeon, send it to the control room. I'm scared of nature. I'm Tom Hall. We'll continue after a break. Stay with us. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow here on Midday, an acclaimed environmentalist issues an urgent call to arms to stop climate change. Bill McKibben joins me to talk about his latest book, Falter: Has the Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out? Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Sam Shepard's Curse of the Starving Class. That's at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick, and that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you just joined us today, we're talking about robocalls. They're annoying, and most of the time they're illegal, and they persist. Here's how Jerry Seinfeld dealt with a telemarketer back in the days of ringing landlines.
I'm sorry, excuse me one second. Hello?
Hi, would you be interested in switching over to TMI long distance service?
Oh, gee, I can't talk right now. Why don't you give me your home number and I'll call you later?
Well, I'm sorry, we're not allowed to do that.
Oh, I guess you don't want people calling you at home.
No.
Well, now you know how I feel.
Oh, the hilarity. It was a big joke back in 1992. My guest today on Midday, Jeffrey Fowler. He's a technology columnist for The Washington Post, and Dr. Raymond Tu. He's a computer science professor at the University of Maryland in College Park. To reach us by phone, 410-662-8780. That's a landline, by the way. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And Jeff Fowler, speaking of landlines, there's a totally different kind of technology that's available to stop the landline robocalls. The cell phone and landlines require different approaches to the problem, right?
That's right, yeah. There are services you can switch on from your cellular carrier, some apps you can use, and we can talk about those in a minute. But if you're getting besieged on your home landline, it's unfortunately even harder to stop. That's because home landlines actually use different kinds of technology. Some are kind of more modern ones, like the one I'm on right now is called VoIP, Voice over IP. There are some things you can do with those. Others are old copper lines, and they don't really work as well with these kind of newer technologies. And still, a lot of Americans have those copper lines. But if you do happen to have one of those more modern VoIP lines, a place to start is a free service called Nomo Robo. You can probably talk to your carrier about it, or you can just go to the Nomo Robo website. What it does is when a call comes in, you'll hear it ring once, and then simultaneously, that call will also ring over at Nomo Robo. And they'll check to see if it's a robocaller. And if it is, you won't hear from it again. And if it is not, then the phone will ring again on your home line.
And Dr. Tu, you mentioned that the standards are different from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. You mentioned in a pre-interview you did with one of our producers that there are companies in China that are working towards, fixing their standards and trying to change things from there. A lot of calls that we're getting here in the United States are generated from China or from Eastern Europe. I get calls all the time from Armenia and Azerbaijan. This is an international problem. So even if American carriers like AT&T and Verizon and Sprint, if they address it, what good is that going to do? Are they going to be, are we still going to have problems because of standards in other places?
So here's the thing: when we deal with the U.S. issue, a lot of the calls actually do come from the United States, but they're just located from a different country. So, for example, let's say if a person operating in Armenia, they could go to a website that offers internet phone calls. Okay, but it's a U.S.-based company. They can open an account over the internet and send out phone calls within the United States, but they're actually just operating in a different country. So by setting up a, let's say, standard like STIR/SHAKEN, even though it's not an international standard as far as the adoption is concerned, it can stop a large number of spoof caller IDs that relies on these operations running a U.S. running their operations based on the U.S. carrier.
So it gets so internationally complicated. And Jeff Fowler, we have an email from Oren, who says, I'm a millennial, and I absolutely fall into the millennial stereotype of being terrified of phone calls. In this text and message-based world, I don't pick up for anyone ever. When my phone rings, I'm literally startled and think, what the heck is my phone doing? If it's an emergency, I am not the person you should be calling. So this is kind of a generational thing in a lot of ways. I mean, I think older people are just more inclined to answer the phone because we grew up answering the phone. Millennials say, don't call me. Don't leave a voicemail. Lord knows I don't want voicemails. If you need to get in touch with me, text me.
Very true. And I think that you made a really good point there as well about voicemails. I've heard from so many different readers of the Post about their solutions to robocall problems, and a lot of them say, I just make everybody leave a voicemail, which is, if you listen to your voicemails, then that's great, but there is definitely a generation of folks who doesn't even know where to get to the voicemail part of their phone. So that's not really going to work for them.
Let's go back to our phones, to Elizabeth in Bel Air. Elizabeth, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I understand that we live in an international environment. I'm frustrated, though, that the telephone companies and carriers cooperate with each other, but they don't cooperate in terms of sorting out the criminal activity here. Obviously, the phone companies are making money on both sides of this. I'm wondering why we tolerate this cooperation where they don't work to protect us and to sort out what they need to in terms of protecting us from the robocalls and the criminal activities.
All right, well, thanks for that call. And Dr. Tu, I mean, is it a free speech issue? Is it a, you know, is this the same kind of issue that companies like Facebook and Google and Amazon are facing as well?
So she mentioned a really good point. Why aren't the telephone companies doing something to help to stop robocalls? So it mainly comes from two reasons. One is legal problems. It's very difficult for a telephone company to decide or basically legally, they're legally bound to carry all telephone calls without exceptions because they are not there to censor any telephone calls or look, peek into the content, answer the call behalf of you, and decide whether or not this call is legitimate or not. They're not supposed to do that. That's number one. And number two is you have a robocall, even if someone is making robocalls, the telephone companies, they don't want to deal with this problem because it's just against their business interest. Having a service, they're there to provide a service, not provide censorship. Some companies or the FCC are obligating the major telephone companies to deploy some robocall stopping solution as a stopgap solution until the entire world standardizes call ID authentication. So we are moving towards the right direction. It's just it might take some time for us to see some decrease in the number of robocalls.
And Jeff Fowler, we should point out to folks that if it's an auto-dialed and pre-recorded call, even if it comes from a charity or a political party and it's made to your cell phone, that is automatically illegal under current law unless you've given your express permission beforehand to those entities, right? So if it's pre-recorded, even if it comes from entities that are allowed to make robocalls, like political candidates are allowed to do. Give us some other examples of organizations that in which it is legal for them to make robocalls to people's cell phones or landlines.
Well, there are plenty of legitimate robocall that you might want to get. In fact, to think about your pharmacy that might let you know that your prescription is ready. Think about a school letting parents know that you know it's a snow day or there's something wrong that they need to know about or the kid didn't show up for school. There's also political polls that I know when I was working on this piece, I talked with my colleagues at the Post who run our polling operation, and they were very worried that people were going to use services or just start manually blocking their calls. So another reason I think why the telecom industry has been slow to move is that there's a big business in debt collectors that use robocalls to try to go after people, and they have lobbied and continue to lobby very hard to not block what they're doing.
Let's go back to our phones to Eugene in Nottingham. Eugene, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My comment had to do more with these calls, and I get about 5 or 6 per day, and it's very funny. The lawyer, New Yorker in me, has fun with these people when they call, man. And I'll get on there, and they'll say the same kind of line. It's always about credit card. Your credit score is good, blah, blah, blah. My credit score isn't the best, but they have the same spiel. So I'll say, are you married? Why don't I just come down there, and we can meet in person? I'll play with them, and I'm going to stop doing that because one of my buddies said you never know if they're tracing your call or they may tap into something. But it's just ridiculous, and it sounds like the same guy. And I was telling your screener, it's almost like now when I pick up the phone and he recognizes my voice, he'll just hang up. He doesn't even want to be bothered with my New York sarcastic arrogance.
Yes, you're a known target to robocallers. That's quite a distinction, Eugene. Well, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. And Jeff Fowler, does it matter if you answer the phone or not? I've heard, people say that if you answer even just occasionally these numbers that you don't recognize, it will simply put that number on a list that robocallers will then abuse even more aggressively.
Yeah, the best advice is don't answer and don't engage in the hopes that they might think it's a dead line. It could be that their entire goal of calling you is just to figure out, is this line alive or dead? That said, there is a set of people in the world who really, really, really want to, you know, exact some kind of revenge on these people, either by taking the time personally to, you know, chat them up and see where it can go. And then as part of my my recent column, I played around with some services and apps that you can put on your phone line that will do that sort of in an automated way. There's an app called RoboKiller, which for $4 a month, when it detects that there's a robocaller calling you, it will essentially play them a voicemail message that's designed to keep them on the line as long as possible. Could be, you know, an impersonator of President Trump. It could be somebody coughing a lot or somebody, you know, just sounding really, really distracted. And then it will send you a recording of what happened in the interaction between the two of them so that you can enjoy that if that's the kind of thing that you enjoy.
So John called, couldn't stay on the line, but he says, here's how I handle it. It's kind of the same technique that Eugene had. They tell you to press one for a live person, and then I keep that person on the line as long as possible. I try to waste their time. Of course, you're not really wasting the time of the person who owns the robocalling operation. You're simply engaging the person who's been hired to do that kind of work. Sherman sends an email. The proliferation of unsolicited phone calls is a significant drain on the U.S. economy in general. I spend a lot of time and stress not answering calls and then checking if the voicemail is in fact from a known person. Not having the number in my contact list doesn't seem to help either. I call new businesses all the time who are not on my contact list. The cost to the economy must be several millions. The FCC is failing miserably in this regard. So, Professor Tu, I mean, what's your outlook for, you know, the next 5 years? We're going to talk in our next segment with a woman from Consumer Reports who's working on public policy. But what's your recommendation in terms of the policy arena as to what should happen to help attenuate the number of calls?
So in the past, we've tried many approaches, basically just legal, making robocalls illegal or charging hefty fines or making just big punishments to robocallers. But in the end, they never worked, mainly because it's just so hard to enforce and so hard to collect or shut them down because they keep popping up and up and up. And so the new direction of the of the FCC now is to move towards how do we authenticate the caller ID. And Sir Shaken is one of the approaches that's being taken to authenticate telephone calls. So once telephone caller IDs are being authenticated, then people will regain the trust or somewhat regain the trust in caller IDs. And hopefully in the future, we won't have to bear the situation where people don't want to answer phone calls anymore, that it inhibits business, conducting business, or basically, people just stop using the phone service entirely. So I hope that this this process gets through, gets pushed by the government, and let's see what happens. But I'm optimistic about it if this gets through.
Well, that's good to hear. And Jeff Fowler, in your column, you suggest a number of different apps that you can get. One's called Umail, one's called Truecaller. You mentioned Nomo Robo, RoboKiller, etc. Some of the carriers, Verizon, AT&T, etc., are offering their these spam protectors as part of packages for free now. They used to be charging people for it, but I guess some of them are beginning to offer these as part of the cell phone package that you might have with a particular carrier. Is that right?
That's right, and that's the sort of the no-brainer part where you should start this if you're getting a lot of robocalls. As we were discussing before, the carriers won't block these calls automatically because it's a speech issue. That's not what they're allowed to do. But if you go in and you download these apps, and on AT&T it's called AT&T Call Protect, on Verizon it's called Verizon Call Filter, if you download them and you turn them on, you activate the service, they all have now at least a free level of service. Verizon used to charge for, but now they offer at least a free level, and they will block and flag at least some of the calls coming in. I did an experiment with over 100 numbers that Post reporters got over the month of March, and I found that these services could block or knew to block over 50% of them. So that's at least a place to start, and they're now free, so definitely go in and get those turned on.
Let's go to one more caller from Parkton. This is MV on the line. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I have a couple tactics for taking care of these obnoxious calls. First of all, I don't make a move to answer the phone until it rings at least 6 times. That weeds out a lot of them. Now, the next thing I noted is that most of them call between 5 minutes of the hour and 5 minutes after the hour, or 5 minutes before the half past, or 5 minutes after the half past. And in the 10 years ago, when I'd get a robocall, I had a brass police whistle by the telephone, and I could blow it and get it disconnected. But now they don't disconnect with that.
The whistle technique. Well, thanks for that call. And Jeff Fowler, just got a couple seconds here. That's not my experience, is not the experience of MV, our caller here. They seem to call all the time, and it's very difficult to predict how close to the top or the bottom of the hour one might call.
That is true. Yeah, they'll call whenever they think that there's a chance someone might answer and might engage with them. And the old, you know, making noises into the phone to try to get them to go off might not work super well either, though there are some services out there, some of the apps that I reviewed for my column in the Post, where they will play sounds that sound like a dead phone line, like the boop, 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 boop number that you might have heard before to make the robocallers think that they shouldn't call back that number again.
Jeffrey Fowler is a tech columnist, the tech columnist for the Washington Post, and Dr. Raymond Tu is a computer science professor at the University of Maryland in College Park. Thanks to you both. I very much appreciate it, and we will have a link to the articles by Dr. Tu and Jeff Fowler that we've been talking about today about robocalls. Appreciate it, you guys. Thanks.
You bet.
And when we come back from a quick break, legislative fixes that might curtail the number of unwanted calls we get every day. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. By the way, this programming note, later this month, we're going to start a series here on Midday called Midday in the Neighborhood. And we'd like to speak with the folks who are involved with their neighborhood associations. As we understand it, there are some 278 neighborhoods throughout our city. We want to talk to folks who are involved with their neighborhood associations, their community associations, for all 278 of them. We'll have two or three neighborhoods represented on each one of the installments of these segments. We're going to start on April 29th, which is just a couple of days after the anniversary of the unrest that followed the death of Freddie Gray. We're going to talk to some folks from Sandtown Winchester and a couple of other neighborhoods. But over the course of the next year or so, we want to talk to people who are involved with community associations in every one of the neighborhoods in the city of Baltimore. What do you like about your neighborhood? What do you wish could be changed about your neighborhood? What are the things in your neighborhood you'd like to see retained? What are the things in your neighborhood you'd like to see improved? So let us know who you are. Get in touch with us by email. The address is, of course, midday@wypr.org. Drop us an email with your contact information, and one of our producers will get in touch with you. If you are the president, the chair of the board of the community association, the person who's leading your neighborhood association, come on, Midday. Talk to us. Tell us about your neighborhood. Tell us why you like living there, and tell us what you'd like to see be improved, perhaps the things that the city can do to make things better, the things that your neighbors could do to make things better. So again, drop us an email with your contact information, midday@wypr.org. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the tsunami of robocalls that we all receive on our phones every day. If you haven't yet registered on the Do Not Call list, you might as well. It won't fix the problem completely by any means, but it can't hurt. The website is donotcall.gov. My next guest says that there are some legislative solutions that could help. Dr. Maureen Mahoney is a policy analyst for Consumer Reports who works on consumer privacy issues, including those having to do with robocalls, and she joins us on the line from her office in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Sure. So what do you think? I mean, can there be a legislative fix to this? Is Congress, does Congress have the capacity to squash down these robocallers?
Yeah, so first of all, I want to emphasize the significance of this problem. Consumers are just fed up with these robocalls that are ringing off the hook, jamming up phone lines, preventing them from getting important calls that they're expecting, for example, from their doctors. So It's high time that policymakers start to take some serious action. We are supporting a bipartisan bill in Congress called the TRACE Act, led by Senators Thune and Markey. And it has been making some progress. It passed the Senate Commerce Committee unanimously. And importantly, as Mr. Fowler was talking about, it would ensure that phone companies implement this caller ID authentication technology to better enable phone companies to stop these unwanted calls.
And when it comes to penalties for people who are clearly already breaking current law, it seems that they don't seem to be enough of a disincentive. There was a piece in the Washington Post from last year about a guy named Michael Aaron Jones. We're not exactly sure whether or not that's his real name. He's very wealthy, lives in Laguna Beach, California. He very easily responded to a request from the FCC to testify in a hearing under oath about what he was doing. He owns a robocalling operation that he licenses and leases out to other people. And he pulled no punches and was readily willing to admit that what he was doing was illegal. They gave him a $2.7 million penalty, which he paid because it's just part of doing business. I mean, when it comes to the carrot and the stick, what kind of stick does the government really have in terms of their capacity to enforce these laws that we already have?
Exactly. Enforcement just isn't enough to address the problem. While there are fines for violations, for example, of the Do Not Call registry, it's very difficult in many cases to recover those funds. Scammers are routing phone calls through multiple phone companies before they reach the consumer. So it can be very time-consuming for the authorities to have to get subpoenas on these call records from all these different phone companies. And oftentimes, by the time they actually track down the perpetrator, they've already spent all of their ill-gotten gains. So the Federal Trade Commission has, levied millions and millions of penalties for violations of the Do Not Call registry, but they've only been able to recover a small percentage of it. So that's why it's important not only to have strong enforcement and strong rules to protect consumers from unwanted robocalls, but to also require the implementation of technology to actually stop these calls before they reach the consumer. This is because many of these calls are coming from scammers who are intending to do consumers harm, and no reasonable consumer would want to receive those calls.
And you've written that the current FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, you're encouraged that he has said that robocalls are a top priority, but a number of people, including you, have faulted Congress for the sluggish pace of their action to address these problems. What causes, in your view, the sluggishness? Why is it that this is taking so long to catch on in Congress, given the fact that, as Jeff Fowler said in his column a couple of weeks ago, this is the number one tech problem of the year?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd say that I think the FCC should be doing a lot more to address this problem. I think they have the authority to require the phone companies to offer to all consumers free technologies to automatically identify and stop the robocalls before they reach the consumer, and to implement this caller ID authentication technology, Stir Shaken, that was talked about by the previous guests. But in the absence of the FCC taking action, I think it's important for Congress to step in. I think it's promising that several pieces of pro-consumer legislation have been introduced. I think it's taken a long time to realize that the phone companies need to take more responsibility for this problem to implement technology to address it, but I'm glad to see that the tide seems to be turning.
Are the phone companies reluctant to implement this technology simply because it costs them money to do so and they're reluctant to spend money on anything?
Yeah, I mean, we've been pressing the phone companies for years to implement this technology. We have seen some phone companies offer to consumers advanced opt-in tools to address this, particularly for cell phones. But for traditional landlines, there aren't really any good, free, effective technologies to address that, and I think it is more costly to implement for traditional landlines. So I think cost does play a role, but I think if you look at it in the long term, consumers are so fed up with these robocalls, they don't even trust their caller ID. They don't feel confident about picking up the phone. So I think it's in the long-term interest of the phone companies to do more to stop it.
Is it necessarily a bad thing that none of us are answering our phones very often? I mean, what does it matter if we get a call from a number we don't recognize and we just simply don't answer it, and we, if it's a person we do know or a person that we'd be willing to have a conversation with, that person can leave a voicemail or hang up and send a text. Is there anything intrinsically wrong with not picking up the phone?
No, I think that that's a good step for consumers who are vulnerable to robocalls. But the problem is we often hear from the adult children of elderly consumers that their parents have been preyed on by these telemarketers. You know, the children are telling their parents not to pick up the phone and not to engage with them, but the scammers are able to, you know, develop this relationship, and the children are not able to get their parents to stop picking up the phone. So I think it's a consumer protection issue of trying to stop these, particularly these scam calls before they reach the consumer.
And where can that kind of education come from? Because as we talked about at the top of the show, some 3 to 5% of folks are answering the calls and actually, you know, they're susceptible to the scams. They're sending people money. They're giving them information, personal information that allows people to denude their bank accounts and to, you know, have access to their Social Security checks and that kind of thing. Those are common scams. And as long as there are enough of those people, it's not a high percentage, say 3 to 5%, but those people are generating so much money that it makes it worthwhile for the robocallers to make these millions and millions of other phone calls that that bear no fruit.
Exactly. I mean, that's part of why this is such a persistent problem, because there are such strong incentives for the scammers to call. It's so cheap and easy just to send out a million different robocalls at once. We know that it's really difficult to track these scammers down and bring them to justice. So it's just a continuing problem that there are these strong incentives to robocalls.
Do any of the legislative fixes that you're aware of that are currently being considered, do they require the carriers to offer robocall spam blockers for free? Jeff Fowler was talking about some of the carriers. He said that, for example, Verizon used to charge $4 a month, and now it's free. I happen to be a Verizon subscriber, and right before we went on the air, I looked at, because I had considered this a year or so ago, and I didn't feel like paying the $4 for it per month. So I went on the website again today, and it still appears to me, at least as of today on my phone, that it's going to cost $4 a month. So there are people who are reluctant to pay yet more for the cell phones that we're already paying a lot for. But are there ways to compel the carriers to allow us to, at least in the short term, install fixes?
Yeah, so first of all, I think the FCC has the full authority to do that. But we're also supporting legislation in Congress called the RoboCop Act, introduced by Senator Blumenthal recently, that would require the phone companies to offer to all of their customers free advanced technologies to automatically identify and stop robocalls before they reach the consumer. So this will be on an opt-in basis for consumers who really want these additional protections, but it would also ensure that these technologies are offered for free, because, you know, consumers are paying so much for phone service already, it's not fair to ask them to pay more to protect themselves from robocalls.
Indeed. Dr. Maureen Mahoney is a policy analyst with Consumer Reports. Dr. Mahoney, thanks so much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, I'll have a conversation with the environmentalist Bill McKibben. He's got a new book. It's called Falter: Has the Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out? Plus, J. Wynn Russick will have a review. Curse of the Starving Class is in production at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop there on the Avenue in Hamden, offering a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. Coming up next month, a kitchen technique series. The series begins on May 7th and runs for 5 weeks. There's more information on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com, and gift certificates are available. Coming up next, Future City with Wes Moore. That's coming up after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.